Good morning, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Last week, we brought you an interview with 7th Congressional District candidate Mary Heft. She's a Rice Lake Democrat running against incumbent Republican Congressman Sean Duffy. We extended an invite to the Duffy campaign for a one-on-one interview on the issues, but they declined our request. So instead this hour, we bring you news of the Superior Mayor's retirement next April, 2 years before the end of his term. The Superior City Council will now decide whether to appoint a new mayor or hold a special election next spring. Superior Mayor Bruce Hagen announced he's stepping down yesterday. The following are his remarks to the city made at the Government Center in Superior.
Thank you all for coming here to be with Lois and I this morning. I want to thank the press and people that took interest in this particular occasion. I'd like to first state that this is and will be the only time and the only statement which will be delivered as to what the discussion will be here today. I'll be more firm about that. Don't call me. I will not call you. And I'm not going to be entertaining other types of conversation. And with that, this conversation is one that is very difficult for Lois and I, but also thought out on many levels and over a considerable period of time, about the last year. This conversation is one that is also necessary for the community, for the city, for us, and those that are interested. It goes without saying that Lois and I have been truly blessed with 5 amazing daughters, 2 sons, grandchildren, a great-grandchild, and a large extended family, all of whom we love dearly. Lois and I, in our respective ways, have placed service above self throughout our short life, and with a determined work ethic and a result-oriented determination. Milestones did not come easy, as most of us have experienced in our lives, and they weren't handed to us. We worked very hard throughout our life to reap the results, especially as you normally do if you're Norwegian or a Swede. We work harder than most people because of our nationalities. Not true. But my first job, and I'm going to bore you with a little history here, my first job as a preteen was working for my father around the apartment buildings that he and my mother owned and where we also lived in East End. There were no wages. My dad, Lawrence M. Hagen, was more than a father. He put it that your wages are your pork chops. At night you get your pork chops, and that's where your pay comes from. Dad guided me even when I saw no reason. He was always there for me. My dad and my mother, Inez, taught me the most important lessons in life. Mom and Dad instilled within me and my 8 siblings, I'm the youngest of 9, the importance of family, strong work ethic, honesty, trustworthiness in all aspects of life. I continually hope and pray that I have lived up to all that they provided me in guidance and love. When deciding to run for the office of mayor back in 1974, some time before some of us were around, I went to my dad to discuss my desire to run. At first, he was not supportive and kind of a little angry. He said, with a great job as an administrator in the school district, you've got other little opportunities and a side business. Why would you ever want to give that up? My response was that I saw a need that I believed I could fill. After considerable discussion over a period of time, he did support my decision, and that support was the turning point in my life career choices. Ever since then, I've been involved one way or another in government. Even though I've been in the private sector a period of time, I've owned several businesses, and so I've been kind of a workaholic. I can tell you that as a teenager in high school, I worked 40 hours a week or more in high school. In college, I worked a minimum of 60 hours a week. I had my own business, and trying to put myself through college with the fact that with 9 kids, it's kind of hard to spread that money around among a family. But that's part of the issue that I want to emphasize is the fact that while most people have passion with regard to recreation, hobbies, and so forth. For the most part, I never took the opportunity to do that. I was too busy wanting to work. Doesn't make sense anymore, but that's where I was. So combined with public and private sector employment, I'm now approaching 50 years of professional employment. All of my career opportunities have been in high-level, demanding professional leadership positions that I strive to achieve through hard work and determination. I'm very proud of the numerous achievements that help grow organizations, and I have, bashfully will say that, a lot of organizations that I was with in leadership roles were very successful. I'll cite one, those of you that ever had to file for unemployment. When I was administrator of the unemployment division for the state of Wisconsin, we redesigned the entire system to make it technologically acceptable and appealing to people that filed for unemployment. So rather than going into offices and standing in lines, we developed the first in the nation online and telephone weekly claims, and then we moved it to the initial claims, whereby that you didn't have to go to an office anymore. And the interface of the technology was with the IRS, Social Security, state DOT, and a couple other agencies for cross-match, and the fraud was pretty much impossible. Even though working for organizations have been my passion, the most important and satisfying element of my career are the people that I worked with and also serve. Promoting the talents of coworkers, encouraging career advancement is a leadership trait that I'm very proud to have employed in my occupations as I move through time. I think back right now with fond memories, and I continue to have these fond memories of the many people that I've worked with, but also the many people that I hope I was part of their mentoring to achieve a goal that they wanted to in their path of employment. There have been a number of people that I would feel very proud of the fact that I was able to help them with the position I had and the expertise that they brought. The other half of the story also spans many decades, and some of it isn't exactly pleasing. Hard work, stressful employment, and having to having to be on point most every day takes its toll on anybody, and it has on me. My entire life was all about work. My life story is literally living in the fast lane in so many ways that it has taken its toll. Those that know me and have worked with me know that I am very transparent, sometimes too much. I'm very approachable. I'm goal-oriented, but also very sensitive. Over the years, I've never developed that political thick skin. So I take matters very seriously, and I'm also get hurt very quickly. While being open and quite transparent, I am also a very private person, kind of hard to believe, but when being in politics. So please don't probe me in regard to what I just said. Once again, I want to say that this and will be the only press conference or interview, and I would ask you to respect that. After many deep discussions and weighing all factors, Lois and I are moving to another stage of our life. There is so much that we want to do, and that will be the priority with family, friends, and what we want to do personally. The many people and family that have supported my efforts over the past decades are too numerous to cite. I'd be failing myself and others if I tried to name off people. But I want to tell you, it's been phenomenal with regard to the opportunities I've had, the work that we perform, the successes that we've all had as a team in every organization I've been fortunate to be a part of. People don't work for me. They never have. People work with me, and I work with them. And that's been a mantra that I've had through my whole life. There's several things that I think make an organization successful. It all evolves around people. Number one is in my leadership management practices, I always give the people the authority, not just the responsibility, but the authority to get the job done and make the decision. The second thing I do is get out of their way. Allow them to achieve that goal that they so dearly are attached to. The third thing is celebrate success. It's their success, not mine. So that the success goes to them. The fourth thing is reward them as much as you can. It's not just a pat on the back all the time, but it's meaningful with regard to whether you can advance their salary, their wage, or promotion. So success and determination and giving the authority to the people to succeed is how organizations should be run and how they can be successful. One that some will agree with and some won't in this particular time is we spent a lot of time, 3 years if I think correctly, trying to reorganize the classification and wage scale here. When we began, I want to say 4 years ago, I don't know, staff said, don't do it. Do not do it. We'll be blamed, not you. So I'll take the blame. So, as I said, some will agree and some won't, but every single employee that works for the City of Superior today knows exactly what they're making, they know what they're going to make next year, and they know that their classification is where it ranks within the responsibilities of their responsibilities. And for the most part, I think it served people well, but more importantly is the fact that it's a living document. It's a living document that will carry over every year. For instance, the 1% that the council is likely to give the employees for January 1 will be accompanied by a 2.5% increase because of the step system that the classification and range has provided. So in planning for your family next year and what you want to do, what you can do, can't do, they now know where they stand with regard to their employment and what the remuneration will be for their employment. I'm very proud of that, and I want to thank the administration for carrying that forward. I also want to thank the city staff for the opportunity working with them. To me, those that I've worked with here at the city are second to none. I'm not being trite about this. I've worked in a lot of organizations over the years, from very small to 2,500 people that I was leading, and this one is shy of 300 or 275. The talent, the dedication, the professionalism of the people that serve you, you and I, the people of Superior, are truly amazing. I've learned so much from those that serve our city, and my respect for all of them runs very deep and very high, no matter what position or service they provide to the public. Just dwelling on that for a second, this city, some people would not agree because government is to be bashed, and sometimes rightly so. But this city operates very lean with regard to every department. I can look back when there was an opportunity to have more employees doing the good things that they do. But over the time, and because of budget constraints, and some of it is automation and better things that we can offer the employees to work with, but it's lean. And it will probably stay lean because of the nature of how the economy is, how government reacts, and the, I will say that the unwillingness and perhaps unknowingness of the state in regard to what they believe local government should or does provide. I see continual cutbacks at that particular level for local units of government, the school system, universities. It doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't get them anywhere. My favorite saying, and I didn't coin it, hopefully I did, is that as go the cities and local government of America, so goes America. 70% of the people live in the cities of America, 80% work there, And if the cities and counties and villages and towns and school boards and so forth aren't making it, America doesn't make it. I think that's something that we all have to emphasize with our leaders. When asked what I believe is the most important accomplishment or accomplishments during my terms in office, I believe there are three that rise to the top, at least in my mind. First is jobs. We are fortunate today to have the type of and the extensive employment we have in the city, the county, Duluth, as we do with a 4.7% unemployment rate. It's interesting, it's a much better comparison to many parts of our nation. I recall when I was mayor back in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't unusual, it was actually common to see double-digit inflation here almost year-round. I used to say when Madison got an economic cold, we got economic double pneumonia. And we had a difficult time back then with regard to keeping a diversity of employment in the community as well as employment opportunities. Today, there are jobs in this city that are going for want because there aren't people that want them. There aren't people that are skilled to do them. And some of them are advanced that people just aren't getting into that type of curriculum to achieve that. That particular occupation. The second one is Barker's Island. Many of us in this room won't remember Barker's Island as it was. I do, I did. It was the first thing I thought of when I ran for mayor in 1974. It was a sand spit, a dredged spoil island. There was nothing there but the meteor, which people like Nick Baker and others were able to achieve. So we said that we should put a marina there, we should put a hotel, we talked about a convention center, and hopefully other opportunities. And actually, people said I was crazy. Literally. The thing will sink if you put that on the island, and so forth and so on. So we had to go to a referendum to do it. And that referendum provided 84% of the people that voted said, go for it. So we did, and we were fortunate, working very hard to get a grant from the Department of Commerce, Economic Development Administration, and then we bonded for, I think, $6 million. That was the other issue. People said, why should the public pay for something that other people will enjoy? Well, the reason is that my island, that marina alone, is bringing in $450,000 a year to the city of Superior in revenue, and it's been long, long, long paid for, not including the jobs and the property taxes and other opportunities down there. So I looked at that as I still look at that as my baby. The third, and it's yet to be realized, but will start being realized next year, is Belknap Street. Back in 2012, I believe it was Jeff Getzman and Todd Janigo and Dave Miner and Kay Tenorelli and so a bunch of people. We had a meeting at the chamber office with the Secretary of Transportation and the Deputy Secretary, and I said, Mr. Secretary, I'd like to take you for a ride. Okay, where are we going? We're going on Belknap. And so I said, you need to be prepared because I picked up the worst vehicle the city has. There's no springs, no shocks, and no brakes. And so I want you to get the full Monty of what Belknap is really all about. And he was shocked. He said, man, this is terrible. I said, I'm glad you understand that. So I said, what can we do to encourage Belknap to be addressed? He said, well, let me think about it, and maybe you want to put something together. Once again, we had a small group of people, I think it was 8 or 10, a couple engineers, and we wrote a justification for Belknap reconstruction. I want to tell you that was on nobody's radar, until many years from now. So we went to Madison, Todd Janigo, and I, and Jeff Getzman, and we had a friend of mine who used to be Secretary of Transportation, Gene Cussert. help us in the meeting, and we had Bill McCaution, our lobbyist, and we sat with the secretary, and he said, my people say that we should just put an overlay on Belknap. His body disagreed. He said, let me get back to you. 3 weeks later, hi, Mr. Secretary. He says, we're going to rebuild that. So, that's important for the community. Local government has always been my passion. For many reasons, it just isn't an option any longer. First of all, privacy is the leading factor of ending my career. I've been in the fishbowl a lot of years, and it's wearing on me. The other goes back to decades of stress dealing with many matters that are important to some people, but maybe not others. Having to put up with special interest groups, having to say no, some negativity among people, comments that I'm hearing already about, boy, this guy's going to die. And yes, the failure of state and federal government to even recognize the importance and the value and the contribution that communities have across the state of Wisconsin and the nation. That particular point has soured me to no end. The fact that the state, in most cases, especially with revenue sharing and other things that are necessary, and the federal government really not caring about local government. My passion is gone. I am peopled out, and I'm approaching 50 years in high-level stressful positions that has affected my health. 18 years as mayor is enough. I deeply apologize to my supporters and the citizens of Superior for not being able to fulfill this term. Our decision to retire has nothing to do with politics locally. It is strictly personal. Lois and I prefer to concentrate on our own lives, our family, our future, and our friends. I will be fulfilling the responsibilities of the Office of Mayor until the end of April of 17. And I want to dwell on that a little bit. I'm announcing this this resignation, if you will, today, and to retire to facilitate sufficient time for those that want to consider running for mayor to do a self-examination and look at the process, the election, as to what they can bring to the table, what passion they have for our community, and go for it. The process of the election is Terry Colon, the city clerk, will be talking to council leadership, will be the responsibility of council leadership, President Olson, Vice President Bender, and Terry, and probably the city attorney Frog. This is important. To address community challenges, I believe more than ever in the need for younger leadership. We need younger leadership. All the torches need to be passed to young professionals that have perhaps a new and maybe a better vision for Superior. As citizens, we must elect a mayor that has the passion, the energy, the commitment to achieve what we all desire for Superior to aspire. This is another reason why I'm stepping down with notice. Hopefully today and my official intention to retire will give rise to individuals to examine and determine not just their interest in running for mayor, but most important, what vision and experience that they will be necessary to achieve the goals that are also necessary for Superior to grow. During my tenure, I have purposely appointed a number of young professional men and women to different committees, commissions for the city. I was given a wow moment in 2012 or 11 when a young lady asked me to have coffee. Did. I drove away. She said she wanted to learn how to get involved. I said, well, there's several ways you can do that. I drove away back to the office, and what came to mind is, I'm not being negative about older people, But there wasn't a young person, a younger person, and oftentimes a middle-aged person that was on part of any committee or commission for the city of Superior. Wow. So I have purposely tried to appoint some younger people that have a goal and a mission and a passion to some of our committees and commissions, and I look forward to seeing younger people in the future representing the needs and the desires and the accomplishments that happen because of their being here. So let's get this thing moving. I'm excited. Lois is excited. I'm excited for our future. I'm excited for the city of Superior. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited that I've had the opportunity to be here. I really appreciate the support I've had over the years since 1974 and today. It's been a great, great opportunity for me and the people that I love. So we thank you for being with us here today. Thanks to the people of Superior for supporting the community and the support for Superior's tomorrow.
Again, you were just listening to Superior Mayor Bruce Hagen on his announcement that he's stepping down as mayor next April. The Superior City Council won't be able to decide whether to appoint someone to fill the remainder of his term or hold a special election until next spring. The earliest an election could be held at this point is July. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. When we come back, Olivia Shalaby brings us a story about what may be going bump in the night at Superior's Fairlawn Mansion. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Superior locals are well aware of rumors that things go bump in the night at Fairlawn Mansion, and as Olivia Shalaby reports, the mansion will be hosting a presentation of a paranormal investigator's findings today and tomorrow.
Scott Kenner investigated the mansion for paranormal activity more than a year ago. Kenner has conducted investigations around the Midwest. A native of Duluth Superior, Kenner says it's always had a reputation for hauntings. He was intrigued by rumors that boys had drowned in a pool that used to be located in the basement of the Fairlawn Mansion.
In the basement, in the pool area, we had several voices of children answering questions.
Kenner says the house is definitely active, but he says the SS Meteor whaleback ship in Superior is more of a paranormal hotspot. Kenner says he uses a variety of equipment to capture anything that's out of the ordinary.
Our digital voice recorders, the spirits are able to manipulate or speak in a frequency or in a wavelength that we can't hear with our ears usually. Sometimes we can, but usually we can't, and our digital voice recorders will pick those up. Our full spectrum camera will shoot pictures in normal wavelengths, plus it'll shoot in infrared and ultraviolet wavelengths that we can't see with the naked eye.
The presentation will be held on October 28th and 29th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Fairlawn Mansion in Superior.
That was Olivia Shalaby reporting. Following Kenner's presentation, staff will hold special flashlight tours of Fairlawn Mansion. The tours are held every year, but this weekend people will have a chance to see areas of the mansion that are typically off limits. We interviewed Superior Public Museum's coordinator, Stacy Buchanan, last year about the history behind the four-story Queen Anne Victorian home. Buchanan shed some light on the truth behind rumors that it's haunted.
Fairlawn Mansion was built in the 1890s by Martin and Grace Pattison. He was a lumber baron and a mining baron in the area. He was originally from Ontario, but he used money that he got from land prospecting in northern Minnesota, and he discovered iron ore, and that's really where he made his big money. And he'd built Fairlawn after he became mayor of Superior. And so it's kind of just an iconic piece for Superior. I think when people come to Superior, that's what they think of. But they lived in the house up until about 1920. Martin passed away in 1918, and his wife moved out to California, but then she donated the house to be used as a children's home. And so it was used as a children's home from 1920 to 1962. And then after a few years after the children's home was closed, they decided to use it as a museum in Superior. So that's basically the brief history.
Okay. So was the mining around here, or?
He actually discovered iron ore at the Chandler Mine near Ely, Minnesota. And so right where we would expect, right in the center of kind of everything that was going on with the iron ore up in that area.
So there's been a lot of people coming and going over the years through that house.
A lot. Besides the family, with the children's home, we've had an estimated about 2,000 children come through the house, which out of the 42 years is quite a bit.
Wow. And, you know, the fact that it was a children's home, I mean, was it like an orphanage or?
We usually talk about it more as what you'd think of as foster care today. Not necessarily orphans. You would have had a few come through, but most of them would have been what we think of as foster care kids.
And so every year you put on these flashlight tours during the Halloween season.
Yeah.
And so can you kind of describe how that goes then?
We do the flashlight tours just before Halloween for a couple of days, and then we do them Friday the 13th throughout the year. So wherever Friday the 13th falls, we also do the flashlight tours. But what we do is we talk about the superstitions of life in the Victorian era. So tour guides, you know, it's away from their regular tour, and they get to talk about those different superstitions, be it, you know, marriage or death, ghosts, fairies. There's a couple of different topics that they can pull from that they talk about on their tour. So a little bit different from the regular tour, just giving the history and showing the house. But you do get to go through the house in the dark. So that's kind of the best part.
So what are some of the superstitions then that you talk about on the tour?
Like I said, it really depends on the tour guide on what they choose to talk about. When I was doing flashlight tours, probably my favorite topic to talk about was death during that time. First of all, they didn't have funeral homes like we think of now. So most of the funerals would have taken place in the home itself. And so different superstitions they had with death, like mirrors, you had to cover up the mirrors so you wouldn't get possessed, how funerals would have taken place in a home such as Fairlawn, some of the dress, like we think of, you know, you have to wear darker clothing, but actually they had very specific directions for whoever the family member was related to. So if it was the widow, they had specific things that they needed to have. If it was a son or a daughter, they needed to have specific dress. They had issues with the clocks. They always stopped all of the clocks at the time of death. But they did think that you could get possessed very easily or be taken with them to death if you weren't careful.
Yeah. Well, why did they think that at that time?
We don't know. Victorians is probably one of the most superstitious, I want to say, time era. They took a lot of what they learned from, like, medieval times, and then, you know, had these superstitions about it. They replicated many things. It's very difficult to find artifacts. You know, if you have somebody brings in a certain artifact, sometimes it's very difficult to tell between medieval and a Victorian copy. So they were just obsessed with it. It was just the thing that they did, so.
And so were there any types of these funerals held at Fairlawn Mansion?
Martin Pattison did pass away in 1918, so he would have had a funeral at that time, and that would have been taken place at Fairlawn, just as anybody who would have passed away in their own home, that's how it would have been done.
And did he pass away in the home?
He did pass away in the home. He died in his late 70s, they do believe of diabetes issues, but in his sleep, about the best way I guess you could go.
And so you've worked in this house for 13 years.
Yeah.
And so I'm just thinking about you being there alone at night, maybe closing things up in his room. Any stories about that?
I do not personally have any stories. I have worked there for 13 years, but I have never come across anything. There are many stories out there, and we do touch on a couple of the biggest ones during the flashlight tours. And we put it out there that we let you believe what you want to believe, but we're not going to... Most of us haven't had issues throughout the home at night or even in the dark. It's been pretty peaceful, but that doesn't mean that people haven't had their stories come about.
Right. I've heard some rumors from people I used to know that were either attending school at UWS and then working there part-time. And so what are some of the things that people have said over the past of they might have experienced?
I would have to say probably the biggest stories would be from staff members hearing children's laughter or like playing near the pool in the basement. There was a story well out on the internet for many years that talks about two kids who would have drowned in the pool during the children's home. We don't know that they would have had the pool during the children's home. I mean, they had financial issues with food and keeping care, taking care of the kids, let alone to, you know, fill a pool and be able to have kids being able to use it. So hard to say, but that's probably one of the biggest ones. One of the other big stories that are out on the internet that's been out for years is that there's a servant who passed away suspiciously after she had left and married, after she left Fairlawn, and she came back to Fairlawn because it was the place that she was comfortable and felt welcome. And so she is spotted in many areas of the house, either helping people, helping tour guides when they get lost or anything like that. So
really? Okay.
Those are the two big ones.
Lending a helping hand from beyond.
Yes.
Well, that's really interesting. And so this is all stuff that you've heard from people that you've worked with, or have you heard it too from people who take the tour?
Most of it is usually on the internet. I was gonna say I've had a few tour guides who have had experiences. One specifically, they never found the ones that usually have the stories, that they're very kind ghosts or spirits throughout the house. They're never really angry. They're, you know, they're not provoked of any kind. That's usually kind of the theme across the board from those who have had experiences.
Are there any areas of the house that are off limits to the tour?
We do not go in the attic as well as the basement for safety. It's just those are very deteriorated areas and it's difficult to get into, especially with larger groups and tours. So we do not take those even on regular tours.
You said the basement was where the pool was?
The basement is where the pool was.
Why would they build a pool in the basement?
Who wouldn't want a pool? they actually also had a bowling alley down in the basement as well. And so they did use most of it for storage. They had kind of a laundry area and whatnot. Their major ice box when they first built the house. But they had a nice little area for a 6-pin bowling alley as well as the pool. And the pool is still there. They drained it with the children's home. They filled it, flattened it out, and we use it. They've used it for storage for many years. So.
Okay. And you talk about how, you know, the rumors that exist, the ghosts are, or spirits that may or may not be present are kind. And so I'm just kind of wondering, can you tell us what kind of people the Pattersons were?
The Pattersons were very philanthropic. Martin originally came from Ontario. His name was actually born Simeon Martin Thayer. He ended up in Lower Michigan for a while. He actually was a state legislator at one point for Michigan, and he had a family and two kids. He left his family. They did not know at the time where they had gone. At that point, he ended up in Upper Michigan and actually met his second wife. So he never divorced the first one. And so there's actually quite a bit of a little bit of a scandal with that. But when he came to the Superior Duluth, you know, the Twin Port area, he was your everyday person. He didn't have a lot of money. You know, him and his wife came here. They had a couple of kids. And that is when he started to do the land prospecting. That's where his expertise was. He ended up lumbering at Pattison State Park, which is south of here. And then
named for him.
Yep. Actually, it was named for his wife.
Okay.
Not for him. Yep. He donated it to the state in his wife's name. But when he discovered the iron ore and ended up with money, he was already mayor. He was starting to get back into the politics in this area. But they did have a lot of philanthropic ties, specifically his wife with the Superior Children's Home and Refuge Association. So that's probably the biggest one that we talk about because, of course, it did end up leading to her donating the house to be used as a children's home. I mean, most people wouldn't donate their house after they leave to a cause like that. There was a need, and so that's what she had done. When he passed away, he specifically had it so that the land around the state park was donated in his wife's name. Usually that had to do with financial issues, because again, with will and certain people ending up with money, that was something that they did common back then, but donated his wife.
Well, it sounds like they did a lot for the community, and that they came here in part to start over.
And actually, when he was running for his third term, he was the second, third, and sixth mayor of Superior. So it would have been when that sixth term, before that started, the scandal actually did come about into the Superior papers. His first wife finally did find where he had gone. He chose Patterson as his last name because it was his mother's maiden name. So it was another family name. And surprisingly enough, you know, they bring out this huge scandal while he's running for mayor, and everybody still voted him in. And so, I mean, most of them probably were like, well, things happen. You know, he was very well known in the area, and he was a good guy. So, but he was a part of a couple of different organizations, Masons, Oddfellow, Elks, did a lot within the community.
I imagine no politician wants anything like that to come out during a race.
No, especially back then.
And the first wife, did she have a few choice words to say?
There isn't a whole lot written down.
Okay.
So we don't know what conversations took place. We don't know that he denied we don't even know that he necessarily denied the story. But we do know that she left with a chunk of money at that time and left back home.
I guess that can solve any kind of relationship problem.
So,
well, what else would you like people to know about the flashlight tours?
Gosh, they're fun. This month for October, they do start at 7:30 on October 29th and October 30th. We do these tours on a first come, first serve. We do not take reservations for these tours, especially the ones that fall on Friday the 13th, because they do get extremely busy. We do try to do them every half hour, if not earlier. So trying to get towards that 20 minutes almost, just to get people through as quick as we possibly can. We do have the staff available to do that. And we do ask that you bring your own flashlight. We only have so many available if people do forget.
Mm-hmm. The tour itself takes about 20 minutes?
No, they actually usually take about 40, 45 minutes.
Okay.
But we do try to run them every half hour to 20 minutes, depending on how quickly we can get people through.
Okay. And bring extra batteries. You don't want to be caught in the dark.
No. It is very creepy in the dark, but I feel like any old house is creepy in the dark.
Any house can make weird noises.
Yes, and she does creak often, that's for sure.
Well, any cost to it, or is it free?
It's our regular tour price. It's $9 for adults and $7.50 for students and seniors. We do not recommend it for kids 5 and under. I have had a few people kids who are into that kind of thing, come along, and they've enjoyed it as well. But it's usually for a very unique child under 5 that we'll work with.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to come and talk about it.
Thank you so much for
giving us a little bit about the history of the mansion.
Thank you for having me.
Again, that was Museums Coordinator Stacy Buchanan talking about Superior's Patterson family and the history of Fairlawn Mansion. There is a cost to attend the flashlight tours this weekend. More information is available online at superiorpublicmuseums.org. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but stick around, there's more to come. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio.